And welcome to the Friday Winners and Losers radio program on the Enlightened Radio Network, featuring my good friend and co-host, Karen Valentine. My name is John Case, and of course, we're going to get visited by another old friend today, Larry Bish. And of course, Mike Diesel may pop in at any time with a special announcement. Take care. Here we go. This is a show that was recorded June 9th, 2023. We regularly broadcast Fridays at 7 a.m. in the morning. Hey, Larry, are you going to be visible here? Are you going to go with audio? You want to go with audio only?
I'm messing around with this camera. I can't see myself. I don't know why you can't.
So do you know my good friend and co-host here, Karen Valentine? You must from the old days a little bit. Larry Bish. Karen, good morning.
Hello, Larry.
Hi, Karen.
I hope you find yourself there this morning.
We saw Larry. Larry showed up at our Alliance for Retired Americans brunch.
Oh, good.
Last Sunday, and he has battled, you know, the big C all the way around the block. And by the way, I heard about another big C this morning, which was charter schools. Yeah, and I wrote this expose out of ProPublica, and now adopted by the National Education Project, which is really the AFT. Okay, Diane Ravitch is the author of the study, and about Christian nationalism taking over the charter school phenomenon. And it sounds fairly pernicious. I mean, the Oath, one of the biggest networks of schools, the kids all have to take an oath in the morning.
I think we talked about this a little bit. You know, when I go to visit my mother and my uncle, you know, it's a 24/7 stream of whatever is coming out of the television from Fox. And I was shocked at how much Fox News is into this program pushing, you know, conservative education. It was frightening. I did not know it was that widespread. That was my first experience seeing how intense it was.
Yeah, lots of little dog whistles.
Yeah,
and they find a clever way to, not so clever. You can see straight through it. So, there's ethnic, racial separations. You know, purities. What shall we call it? The girls always have to dress in dresses or jumpers. You know, and. They have to be cultivated as fragile things that guys should take care of.
And that happens. There's some reality for you there.
When you read that, I mean, what can you possibly think? I mean, except, God, there's an ocean of abuse going on. That's what's most likely.
Chivalry is indeed dead.
God, yeah. And I'm not sure, Lord help us, what it was in the Middle Ages. Somehow they managed to have families and get past. Well, now here we are. So it's stunning, stunning, simply stunning. By the way, I was talking to our friend, my friend, I don't know whether you GT who begged off this Friday for, you know, the reason that I have to beg off Thursday sometimes. He has to go get, you know, back shots. I have to get eye shots.
My pastor friend couldn't make it because she has to go to knee physical therapy. We're all falling apart.
I know. It's like, I don't know. And my kitty cat's falling apart. By the way, at 8 o'clock right after now, I got to take her into... They want me to give her these meds and for kidney thyroid, it's combo. Apparently, kidney problems and thyroid problems manifest themselves with similar. They claim they can't tell the difference between which is it one or the other without giving you this medicine. And then you come in within 4 hours after they take the medicine and then they do some scan or blood test or whatever. And they can tell, they claim. Oh, I see now. Okay. And then I don't know what the remedy for either is afterwards, but if there is
I'm sure one. It's another very expensive medication.
Yeah, and then they want you to have this special food that only they dispense and that the cat doesn't like to eat.
Yeah.
You know. Another riddle.
I see it all the time.
Well, you're taking care of a lot of people's animals and stuff. But anyway, so we'll see what happens with that this morning.
Yeah, and, good luck with that.
And now we have to deal with the fact that coming from my daughter's homeland, Quebec, Canada, is this, you know, they can't put out their campfires up there or something. Wildfires are going crazy in northern Quebec and Ontario. And so it's cloudy, but I'm told it's smoke, not clouds.
Oh, it's not just clouds. I was in Baltimore and in Delaware yesterday, and it was, I mean, you down there, you can actually smell the smoke. It really smells like fire.
Yeah, Carol was in D.C. yesterday and said it was just... You can't take your pet. She said she's going to walk the dog, but we're not going to do a big run around in the yard, I suppose. But
yeah, I was thinking yesterday. Because in my line of work, I know very well how much people spend on their pets and the ridiculous things that they sometimes purchase for them. I thought, golly, if I only could whip up some dog masks real quick.
Yeah, some, you know, like customized, right, you know, special Canadian smoke masks for your dog.
And I'm sure, like, the cartoon that happened in my head was that, you know, I'd see somebody walking three dogs and all three dogs would have masks on and the person wouldn't. Because that's how people are with their pets. And it's lovely. People take very good care of their pets and they will buy them anything.
It's interesting. If you just come upon some little niche thing that and you strike a rich.
Well, I just gave away my idea. Somebody that has some time on their hands can have it.
our nephew, Carol's youngest sister's son, he's a big hiker, okay? And he's hiked the West Coast Trail, the Great Divide Trail, all the way up the middle, and the Appalachian Trail. He's done them all. And now, so he had an entrepreneurial moment and decided that he was going to set up a store in New Mexico someplace where the one that goes up the middle of the country starts. And he's going to sell a kind of hoodie, basically, that works for both lighter and colder kinds of weather, as well as a number of other items that would be of value to people on the southern part of the trail before it gets real cold. And, so somehow him and his buddy that are doing this, they made a pitch to the customers that came by that if you wear this special hoodie, that it might save your life, you know, and you'll be identified as I can't remember the name they gave some Pathfinder. I think they started giving people names. Mm-hmm. They made it all up. But, you know, since people are headed off on a journey that's, especially in the middle of the country, not well marked in a lot of places, they started to make money at it. Everybody started to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell them it'll save their life. And
you know, the professionals do it this way, whatever.
It's and, called marketing.
So he wrote back because we had loaned him, actually we loaned him our camper because he didn't have any place to stay out there. And unfortunately, it broke down twice going to Arizona, and we had to pay to repair it too, but whatever. But the point being is he got out there, and at his first, you know, whatever it was, $5,000 worth of these hoodies and assorted other things that he was selling, he's in his back, big picture of all of his successes. So I guess we may get the trailer back eventually rather than... I don't know.
Maybe it'll come along with two life-saving hoodies for Uncle John.
Yeah, right. I know, right. A life-saving hoodie. Yeah, right. Hey, Larry, are you alive there?
I think I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
I guess you're not going to be able to see me. Lucky you.
Well, that's okay. Your camera probably isn't working or something. But
that's right. I can't get it then.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. So do you have, so far we've covered charter schools and hoodies. Do you have either one? You going?
I don't know. What have we been talking about? We've been talking about the sheriff in Texas who wants to put press charges against his son. So, matter of fact, California, there's one in Texas, there's a couple more, for kidnapping.
Say that again. Sheriff is...
There's a sheriff in Texas that wants to file charges against him for moving those migrants against their will and for fraudulently talking them into getting on a plane and doing it. It turns out this is a major crime.
This is Abbott or DeSantis we're talking about?
DeSantis at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
But I've got the sheriff in. I don't know the details. But and then the governor of California is going after him.
Wow. This is these two guys. And Trump got indicted for a federal crime today, right? Yesterday.
That's what I heard, but I don't know whether to believe.
Well, Mike Diesel, we're unlucky enough to have him find our number. He's going to call in and probably yell at the world over this for a minute, but he's been waiting to heap, you know, victory cheers and stuff on. I'm not sure it's a. I still maintain the opinion that once it gets to the Supreme Court, they're going to exonerate him. But since he,
I agree. I don't think they'll ever prosecute him. I mean,
they might. I mean, they're trying to. Obviously, somebody's doing it because he obviously committed crimes. At least in my opinion.
Oh, right. But I do have some case in this hound dog Jack Smith.
This is a prosecutor?
Yeah, he's a prosecutor.
Yeah.
Apparently he's a very famous one for doing stuff like this.
Yeah, he's supposed to be a hard case. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
You know, well, good. I mean, I guess it's going to go all the way to the Supremes, looks to me like. They haven't done much recently that indicates any respect for rights that some of the rights that I kind of support.
That court stack. And, you know, the whole system, in my opinion, is I don't even know if it's redeemable.
There you go.
The voters just aren't well enough educated to discern between a lie and the truth. Well, they don't know how to do it.
I don't know.
So they go completely with their gut.
Yeah.
Larry, I had a moment yesterday that I'm going to agree with, because I really try not to make judgments and
generalizations.
Yeah.
It seems like a generalization.
Yeah, and I try to not do that, and I try to not put these people in a box. But I was behind a car, and it just, oh gosh, I hate when it, like, people so obviously prove their
Get easy.
thank you. I was going to use a stronger word, but yes, idiocy is a good one. So there was a bumper sticker on the back of this car, and the only word I could read, of course, was Trump, and then there was other words, but it was one that I had not seen before. So I inch up closer so that I could actually read it. So in the meantime, this is at a stoplight. In the meantime, the person driving throws out a wrapper from a cup or something, just litters right there, just throws it right out the window. And then she was smoking her cigarette and then throws her lit cigarette out. Now, we are breathing smoke from wildfires. It's all over the news.
Right.
And we haven't had rain in how long? And so it was really those two things that made me not like this person. But then when I was able to read the bumper sticker, it just made the entire situation, my 30 seconds at the red light, worthwhile. The bumper sticker said, "I love Trump." So the Trump was in big letters. "I love Trump. And if you don't, you probably won't love me. And I don't care." And I thought, whoa.
There you go, man.
Actually, what I really don't like about you is that you just littered and threw a lit cigarette out. But it kind of put her in that, box that we just, I hate when my point is proven, because I want to be wrong sometimes.
That could have been a useful video moment there, Karen. All those bumper stickers and the cigarette being thrown out.
I know I need to carry around a GoPro or something, because I travel around enough and I see these crazy things.
We could stage that easily. Just make a commercial and put it online.
It was so great. And the cigarette button, and this is a day that, like, everybody is like clearing their throats and rubbing their eyes.
You know what? Do you guys ever watch Jason Kepler? Comedian and interviews people at Trump rallies.
Oh, Jordan Klepper.
Jordan Klepper, that's right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was definitely a Jordan Klepper moment.
Yeah, that's a what that would be an interesting ad to produce there. We could it would be yeah.
No,
It would speak for itself.
It's something I've been wanting to get to say, I guess, is about my attitude, because I struggle with it, because I'm not a person that wants to hate. And that made me real unusual in my family. I was, and I just don't know how to put this succinctly. My whole childhood, my whole life, I grew up in Sharon, Pennsylvania, which is northwest corner of Pennsylvania near Erie. But
Right.
it was south enough to be close enough to Pittsburgh. It was part of the Rust Belt. And every male in my family worked in a steel mill. And so did I. When I was 15, I went to steel mill like every boy did. Well, I was a lot younger than some, but anyway, what I'm trying to say is this stuff that we talk about as old people, I grew up just completely immersed in that. When you said, John, you're not gonna be able to talk these people out of anything, boy, forget it. I mean, the people in my life, they're bigots, racists, and to a degree to their soul, and it's not the South what you think of it, or some hard-line Southerner. That whole community I grew up in was like that.
Yeah, Larry, you make a good point there because I know a lot of people like that, and they're my family as well. I'm certainly the black sheep in my family, and
oh, there we go.
And they go to church and they preach Christianity. And one thing that, you know, John and I have been talking about spirituality. One of the things that took me kind of on a journey to figure out, you know, how I wanted to practice my spirituality was the because there was so much inconsistency. I was like, how can you hate, but then we go to church and talk about loving one another? And, you know, it led me to leave, you know, the Catholic Church because I didn't like all of the, you know, kind of twisted, you know, Saturday night and Sunday morning things. Like, what you did on Saturday night doesn't matter as long as you're there Sunday morning. And so it kind of leads you to this place. And I hear what you're saying. It's like you don't want to judge. You want to be a kind person. You want a place in your heart for everyone. And when you know these people and when they're part of your family, you actually see how it's more of a habit than it is something that they actually reflect upon. Like, you know, I often wonder, does anybody really believe this stuff, or is it just habitual?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And where's the personal reflection? Like, do I really believe that this person that talks this way about women should be our president? Like, do I really, as a human being, believe that, you know?
Yeah, right.
There's a psychology of what you're saying, and they're not so much brainwashed as it's a part of them, almost unchangeable part of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a psychological thing of having to do with the way you're raised. When I was raised, my mother's family wasn't like that. They had college educations and they lived just up the hill. I spent a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bish family, my dad's family, were the people we're talking about, not my maternal relatives. Anyway, I can give as an example. I didn't fit in. You said you're the black sheep. I just didn't fit in. I was the oldest son of the oldest daughter. And I still didn't fit in. And as an example, I'll give you hunting, which was such a ecstatic time of year. It was a big deal. The stores closed. I had my first son, 8 years old.
Sure. The hunting is a religion. Yeah.
But what I would say is I never got it. I shoot the animal, clean it. My brother and I did all the cleaning. In small game, it'd be a pile of dead animals. We'd clean them, we'd eat them. And, you know, it was just part of life, but it was one they're especially proud of.
Yeah.
And who got the deer really mattered. You know, and
right.
I don't think a lot of people quite grasp that. I see other people trying to explain it like I am, get this talked over, because the panel they're on is going to, is the Harvard graduates who never shot a month, you know. And so it doesn't get understood about these people. And I don't have the optimism I would like to have about where this is going. Because these are the people that the Republicans are marketing to. They know them, and they're easy to know. It's not hard to figure out what these guys are afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And hit them with it like it's at their door, and that's what they do, and it works. And you know, you're gonna have trouble talking a panicked person out of his fear. You're not trying to reason with him; you're trying to talk him out of his fear, and it's fear he's deeply ashamed of, and so it doesn't admit it to himself.
Right.
So it comes out as anger. And you know, and the church stuff is worse. You know, they substitute faith for fact. And they don't have
absolutely.
They don't have to know the facts once they have their faith. So they just follow their gut. You get all these people following their emotions. And emotions, as valuable as there are really dangerous if you don't understand them. And you're talking about your spiritual practice. You know, I wish we could teach all children to meditate, because it gets you in touch with yourself in a way that sets you aside from your thoughts. And you can observe your thoughts. And then you can pick which ones are idiotic, because they aren't all right.
Exactly, Larry. You know, you touch on something that, you know, what I was talking about was that I feel like this, you know, group of people that are the minions or the followers that will just eat this stuff up don't have that sense of self-reflection. And I wonder, like, what happened to that? Like, where did they not develop some sort of inner voice of, like, questioning right or wrong, that has nothing to do with a god or a church or a priest, but like that they themselves within can question right or wrong and ponder possibilities of seeing things differently. And you know, I grew up on a farm, and as a young child, my great uncle would drive me on the tractor far, far away from the farmhouse and drop me off with a stack of bushel baskets, and I would pick green beans all day. And I wouldn't see a soul. I was 6, 7 years old. And, you know, harvest time was like your hunting season. Everything shuts down. I didn't go to school. You know, everybody did what we did on the farm. And when I was done picking my beans, I knew until I heard the tractor, I wasn't getting picked up. And so I would lay there and I would look at the clouds and I would have conversations in my head. I would imagine what it was like being a bird. And that's what you're talking about. That is like childhood meditation.
Oh, my. Yes. That's one of my favorite childhood memories. I don't have a lot of them, but is I would find a place like under a bush where I couldn't be seen and lay on my back there for hours. Exist. Yeah.
And you find a way to get through things. My place was on the hayloft of the barn, and we would always have a pig or two under the hayloft, and I would be out there, and you know, they were my friends. I would talk to them, you know. I was just kind of this little kid that wandered around the farm. And I remember when my uncle, I was probably no more than 5, took me out to the hayloft, and he's like, well, it's time you see what happens to the pig. This is how we eat all year. And shoots him right between the eyes. And I was like, oh, okay.
There you go. What happened to Wilbur?
Shit. But then I discovered gratitude. Like I was able to handle that, because that is what provided us food. And I became grateful for, like, the pig having enough time on this earth to be my friend. It was time for him to go.
Time for him to go. Right.
I found a way to develop a rational relationship around real life issues, you know?
Yeah. They told us never name a farm animal.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Never give them a name.
Right.
You know, you're talking about why they don't acquire reasoning. A good, you know, solid reason. That would replace the Christianity.
Let me ask you a question.
You aren't going to do that.
On the question of Christianity. So, suppose Christianity did not promise eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And it said when you're gone, you know, or you're back to the flowers, whatever.
Or maybe they didn't have that promise, because that's what everybody's afraid of.
Or maybe forward to the flowers. I don't know. Whatever. The flowers might be happier. So without that belief in some sort of life after death, would the religions, some religions do not absolutely depend upon it.
Buddhism doesn't.
Buddhism, well, there was a period, almost all the religions had a period where the divine somehow authorized the king to rule or something like that, okay? But you're right. Buddhism was, from in its origins, certainly, and then in a lot of the different trends, doesn't require that.
You're talking about children who grew up praying to an invisible God before every meal.
Right.
And asking an invisible God to forgive their misdeeds. And asking an imaginary God, in my opinion, imaginary,
right,
to give them stuff.
Yeah, right.
And do that and not see the absurdity of it.
I have a story that when I was in the fourth grade in Catholic Church I can't remember what grade it was where you did your first confession. I remember being so nervous because I was a good kid. I really was a good kid. I didn't lie. I didn't steal. But I was in line, and this is like imprinted in my brain, in my little uniform, and I'm shaking. I was just so nervous, and I was like, I've got to make up a lie. Like I've got to make something up because they say that everybody sins. So I can't go in there and say I haven't sinned. So I got to make something up. So luckily my maiden name, my childhood name began with an R. So I was at the end of the line. time. And I remember asking my little girlfriend, I'm like, what did you say? You know, her last name began with a B, and she went and sat in the pew, and I was like, and she said, I disobeyed my mother and father. I said, okay, I'll use that one. And then, I did. So I made up two lies. I made up a lie that I stole a quarter out of my mom's purse and that I disobeyed my mother and father.
All right.
And then years later, I thought, how weird that because I was told that everybody's a sinner, I had to make up a sin to confess about. So I lied about sinning, and I was just like, oh. So that was my first of many revelations about how ridiculous this was.
You know, I wasn't raised in a Catholic church, but I was raised in a, I guess they called it High Episcopal or something like that, because they didn't have confession. But nonetheless, in the youth program, we were all challenged to do a confession. And we had a real smarty pants in our group. You know, he said, well, I would like to confess to the sin of vanity. And what do you mean? He says, well, I don't think I have any sins. I thought it was pretty good, you know, but the minister did not buy it. That's okay. He was able to...
another thing that's been bothering me a little bit. Again, I feel kind of out there by myself, but it occurred to me that, especially as evangelicals, and as I follow the news and I hear, I forget what legislature is suggesting that lower the number of Democrats through gerrymandering or any way necessary, and then he said hunt down the ones that are left. This is a Republican state senator, I think.
Yeah.
Now I don't really have a hard time seeing this turn into a shooting war. You know, all it takes is what Hitler did to the beer hall. And we've got these groups, and they're organized, and they're violent, and they're crazy, and they have leaders. And I could see that happening. It's similar to what's striking me as similarities between terrorists and evangelicals, Islamic terrorists, Christian evangelicals, I just won't accept that Christian evangelicals aren't just as capable of what these people are doing as anybody else.
Oh, yeah,
they believe crazy stuff. You know?
Sure. I agree. You know, the I'm not as pessimistic as you are, ultimately, really, Larry. You know, I've seen a lot of situations where people who are, you know, dug in culturally or in other ways to a certain position can be, you know, necessity, especially economic necessity, at least a lot of times. Or contrasted with opportunity. Look, there's one way out of this, fella, you know, and all the other ways, you're going to lose money for all your stuff. And that, you know, it's a kind of force, right? I mean, you know, you're persuaded against your will because you don't have another alternative. For example, I was raised in, you know, I never saw a black person that was not a servant. Until I was like maybe 12 or 13, and I went to this, it was sponsored by this church, by the way, you know, an integrated kind of thing that was run by an Episcopal African-American minister. She was connected with Dr. King in one way, you know, but nonetheless, we had an integrated group, okay, and they went on a camping trip, and they went to some place in the mountains of Virginia, and, you know, we all had a good time and came back, and then you're right back into this culture that is completely exclusionary or whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, it just scratches your back, right? You know, you can't step away from it. It's like you talk to somebody and you can't look away from them, you know, because the message just somehow connected, you know, right there, and they had you. And so I think people are changed by history and by events. I don't think the Trump project can succeed. And now I know there are billionaires behind him, especially in real estate and, ag biz and oil, okay, and you know, and they don't believe in democracy anymore.
No, they don't.
Whether they ever did, but they don't now, and they think that that's going to lead to disaster, to whatever. And for them, existentially as businesses, maybe they might be right. They might be right, and this happens. So, you know, it's like if you look at in Europe, you know, with the old church and all the nobilities and stuff, and all of a sudden this explosion from the French Revolution took place, well, the American Revolution and then the French Revolution, which was a purer revolution because it also abolished slavery. And all of a sudden, doesn't matter, you know, all the prejudices and centuries-long institutions, right, and habits of life are just, they're not there. They're not there, and you have to change or you die.
I am 100% support wage limits or wealth limits. For it, nobody needs more than a couple million dollars. I just can't see it. And the billionaires, as I see it, are the problem economically. And they're suppressors. And they're the ones running the show. And, you know, and it's not news. Carlin's been on it forever.
Yeah, right.
The problem is unregulated capitalism. And, wow. Boy, say that, you'll start a fight.
already got one going.
The other thing, John, you said is I never really knew a black person until I joined the Marine Corps.
Right.
You know? Yeah. There weren't any. They didn't. There were no black kids in my school. None.
None, huh? Yeah, we had
no neighbors. I never places that we did business with no black people. And
well,
you know what you notice is the difference. Say on TV, it used to be Amos and Andy.
Yeah.
Period. Right. Rochester. Yeah. That's all you got.
Yeah. Well, was that Milton Berle's sidekick? Rochester, right? Yeah.
Right. Rochester. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, almost the majority of anchors on certain news stations are people of color. That's incredible. But what I don't like is that the backlash from insecure white people worried about their majority.
Well, they're
they're trying to roll it all back, and that's what Trump's doing. That's what he did. That's what he offered.
Let's go back to John Wayne. He had it down.
I do. I often challenge people in my family. I often just say, what really are you so afraid of? Like, tell me what you're afraid of. You know, my dad, you know, our neighborhood growing up was very white and, you know, lower middle class. And, you know, it's all changing. All of the original people that grew old there of my dad's generation are dying, moving into nursing homes, whatever. So one family that we were particularly close to, the guy died last year, and so his house got sold. And Afghan couple moved in. And my dad has a disorder that, you know, if he gets cut, he could bleed to death very quickly. So he has to be careful. He still likes to do his yard work and all that kind of stuff. So I can't even believe I'm going to say this, because this stuff doesn't come out of my mouth. But he said, can you believe it? A bunch of towel heads moved in over there. Mm-hmm. And I said, Dad, you went to church on Sunday, didn't you? And he said, oh, don't get started on your soapbox. I said, you know, you used to be a Carter Democrat. How are you this person now? My dad was like, he loved Carter. He would write, you know, a money order. My dad didn't have a checkbook. He would write a money order for $10 every month to Mary Knoll Mission, you know. Like, he was a giver.
Yeah.
He is so hard-lined, white and Trumpy now, and it's just so strange. And I said, you better be careful. You know, that could be the ER doctor that saves your life. You don't know these people. Have you talked to them? Is there something they've done that you're so afraid of? Is there something that has hurt you that they've done other than... they moved into a house that you're very used to seeing, you know, a white family in for 50 years. Who cares? You know, that's over.
Yeah.
And sure enough, about 2 months later, he was trimming a branch and it came down and hit him in the tooth and he started bleeding profusely. Who came to his rescue but that neighbor?
Good for him. Well, that's good.
And held a compress on it until the ambulance got there.
Right. That's great.
And I just... but
did he reflect upon that at all?
It didn't change him.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, you know, I said I never saw a black person, but we lived on the corner of a side street at the edge of town. And so, anyway, a black family, a large black family, with a lot of kids and stuff, came around that corner too fast and hit a telephone pole, wrecked the car in line. Someone got hit or hurt. Mm-hmm. And then my dad took all the hurt ones to the hospital. And my mom comforted the ones that were still okay.
Wow.
He took care of it. You know, but all I remember, I was pretty small, but right. I do remember that they responded with kindness.
Right.
And then, like Karen said, it didn't change them, but it does indicate that that's in there, you know.
It definitely plants seeds, and that's where those experiences in life and John's optimism of people changing.
Yeah.
It's not gonna happen without those seeds being planted.
Yeah.
You know, so those experiences are so valuable. And you know, I think what I do and what gets me through is if I can live by example, if I can be a good person living in the present, I practice Buddhist meditation. And if I can just stay on my path, then hopefully something good will shed off of me that will affect somebody else. And I mean, it's like the only thing I've got to hang on to.
You know,
well, how are you gonna be? Let's say Trump wins, and they take over the country. You're not going to change. You're just going to be under their rules. And you know, there's a thing. There's a place. Where does the pacifism become a burden? And if it doesn't, then you're all right. What you're saying, Karen, is kind of stoic. Take care of yourself. Don't get all upset about stuff you can't do anything about.
Well, you can do something about it. I don't agree with that. I mean, Dr. King.
Well, I do both. I do as much as I can as far as, you know, the organizations I support and feet to the ground and campaigning. And I am active, but like for my personal like sanity, I have to just know that, you know, I have to stay on a path that works for me and just hope that things I do will effectuate change. You know, you can't be passive. I do think being passive and not voting is just as bad as voting for someone.
Oh, no,
Trump.
No, no. I'm who I am, and that's anybody.
You know, in the middle of the...
I don't have my tail between my legs. I'm just saying, I look
no,
at things
not.
Like... Yeah, I'm a ex-combat Marine, you know what I mean? I look at things like they don't believe in democracy and they're not going to accept election results.
No, they're not.
Now what? Now what? You know?
Yeah, you have to. They have to be repressed, okay? I mean, there's no other answer. But, you know, the thing is, you know, people will, like Dr. King, for example, how did he build the movement that he did? He said, well, we have to find a way to make the system of segregation not work. You have to get in the way, okay? And he was doing it from a minority position, right? So how does a minority make something not work, okay, when the majority is, you know, not that discomforted by it? And so he figured out a way to do that, but it takes you have. And I think if the repressive forces, the reactionary forces taking over, are a sign of that the whole system is there's something seriously wrong with it. Okay, and it, because people think they're losing from the status quo, and in effect they are. This evisceration of the middle class, the loss of all that manufacturing, for among other reasons, wasn't the only thing. Has had a profound effect on your ability to send your kids to college. So that if you suppose you can't do that anymore, you know, you simply cannot afford to do it. Well, you know, what is the future? It becomes very difficult, you know, to explain to people, you know, and they look for someone to blame. And there's all kinds of media out there run by the billionaires making sure you don't blame them, okay, or trying. Even though people do, you and I do, okay, it's getting out. Lots of people do. But nonetheless, they're spending a fortune trying to cause misdirection and distraction and dead ends and all this other shit, you know. But and I don't know, if you're in the country of an empire, which I want to tell you the United States is. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, you look at empires of the past, okay, and how, what happens? What happens is that they become weaker and their enemies on all the external side bear down on them, okay, because they reach some peak and they just can't extend it any further. Or the bureaucracy that got put in place to maintain it became corrupt in some way, you know. I mean, this has happened in history, you know, a lot of times. But in the end, the people, usually at tremendous cost to themselves, they take care of it. Gets taken care of in pieces, ugly pieces. But I feel that we will just like imagine yourself going into the Civil War in the United States. Okay. How dismal and desperate within families, especially on border states, right? oh my God, you know, and how will we ever survive it? And 650,000 people die in the process. So, you know, and maybe it's time to Mike. I see Mike is tuned in, and I know he's tuned. Before we sign out,
I want to say I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation this morning, Larry. It's really nice to reconnect with you, and Mike Diesel. It's good to see you. But I have to hop off. I'm going to hand my spot over to Mike, and okay. I will see everybody next week, and I hope, Larry, that you tune in especially because we do have my favorite Sri Lankan Buddhist monk.
Yeah, Larry.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. So be sure to tune in. I've got to get to my first dog who I know is waiting for me with legs crossed.
And I have five minutes left to before I have to take my cat.
See you, sweetie. Take care. Good
to
see you.
Good
all
to
right,
see you,
Karen.
Too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Mike, you—I know you.
Hi, John.
Hi, Mike. Welcome to the Friday Winners and Losers program.
Hi,
and Larry's here.
I'm doing okay, man. Doing all right. I said for a very, very long time. I told John this, God, 6 years ago, when that shithead was elected. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this show. I apologize. I just did. But the point is. I tried to stress this. It's kind of like watching a tennis game that never ends because the announcer keeps going game, set, and we're all at home watching him say match, say match. So I would say game, set, and match. Bye, right. You orange Mitch shit given. See ya.
All right, buddy. There we go. We said goodbye to Trump.
You made a reference to ancient empires. I can't escape that. But boy, this is not popular among people who know me. But I don't like football. I don't like football because I know that that's what the Roman leaders did to distract the population from the fact they're starving to death. So that's what the gladiators were for.
That's right.
And it's still there. It's still there and it still works magnificent.
Yep.
Then what you were saying about that they do have a gripe. And there's no question. All this, I told you all men that they were steel. And they didn't give them any left. But they love the people who did it to them.
Yeah.
And they don't just back them, and they don't just support them. They love them. That's my point about emotion. They love them. You might as well be talking about their girlfriend.
you mean my dad?
Yeah.
Because he was one of my coaches at one point in time. So, you know, I think it's probably more than anything, I think my parents just wanted us to be exhausted so we'd all fall asleep at the right time.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. When I was a kid, it indoctrinates you into a violent culture. I will say that. It does.
God.
And there's a lot of what is known now as toxic masculinity big time that just permeates everything else in your life. I mean, hell, to get pumped up, I would listen to George C. Scott's Patton on an album. And I would go out and just take my body and go, I've got 60 pounds of equipment. I'm going to knock the shit out of you. I'm going to knock your fucking head off. And that's the level of mentality that you have to have if you're playing that game. If you want to stand out and you want to start and you want to be the hero, you better bust your ass in the weight room and you better run. And unfortunately, one of the things that I mellowed about, Larry, and I don't disagree with you, one of the things I mellowed about, I love flag football. That is the coolest game.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, people still get, you still got to be careful. There's still a couple of injuries in your legs and such, but what a fun game in comparison to the violence that we see.
It's more like tag.
Yeah, it is. It's a speeded up version of tag. You know, it really is.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we got to bring this to a close, and we're almost at an hour on tape, and you know that podcast, right.
We're making John's life hell.
Although we do have we have 33 listeners at the moment. Okay, so that's whatever, you know, this morning.
Oh, it's those three.
Well, it's been picking up 33. It's been picking up.
Oh, very good. Next, that's nice, John. Good for you, buddy.
You know, it's picking up a little bit, you know, because I just do it every morning.
Yeah. Well, and Dobie's got that mass following that we just interviewed him on the Maxwell.
Dobie Maxwell.
He's going to put his interview up. So.
Okay, I'm going to put him. Yeah. All right. Well, let's
much
say.
Much love to everyone.
Let's,
bye, everyone.
And finally, Larry gets his camera working.
It's a good day for the law. It is a very good day for the law. The law
it is.
Won.
It is, Mike. Bye. Okay, buddy. Long live the Jack Smith. That's what, you know, may he prevail. All right.
We've got our own hero. Yeah.
Take it easy, Larry. Thanks for coming in. Help. Let's keep doing it. It's fun. All right. Take care.